following the radio, we call the president's conversation. We should sit down. So while we were waiting for the president to come, I started playing the Tatla game for the sacred Tehillim. And I opened it. First time, the first chapter I opened to, was the Tehillah we say on Erev Shabbat, the Amud Anan Yedaber Aleihem. Amud Anan was the previous war in Isaiah, which we didn't finish. So I thought that's a connection. And I said, okay, let's go on. He's still having come. I said, let's try number two. And I think, and I said, it's easy to find things in Tehillim. It shouldn't be that hard. So we try two. Number two was Perek, I think it says here, Chavchet, or what, I can't even read, Samachet. It says, Avi Yitomim V'Dayan Almanot. We were sitting there with Yitomot and that's what happens in the war. There are Yitomim and Almanot. Elokim b'mon kodesho, and God is up above. He's in his Ma'on, is a place we protect. He's up there protecting us, as I said. His holy protecting place. And then I went on to the next pasuk, and it said, Be'kol Sharot, which was a word that we learned either yesterday or the day before in the Gemara, and remained in my mind because I showed it yesterday to Yosef. I said that the Be'chi Sharot, Be'chi Sharot, that we're singing with tears in our eyes, so to say. And they both fit in to what was going on. Then again, I said, Hashem, it's too easy. Let's try it a third time. And I read through, I opened to Perek Lamed Vav. I went through the whole Perek, and I didn't find anything until the last pasuk. And it was a pasuk of hope. It says, Sham naflu pi'ilei aven. There fell the doers of evil. Dochu, they were pressed down. Velo yachlu kum, and they couldn't arise. And that was the way our Bikur HaLevim went. And then my wife was sitting in the front row, and Shimon Peres walked in front of her. And Freya said, Am Yisrael Chai. He didn't hear her. So he stopped walking. He gave her an ozen kashavet. He said, What did you say? He said, Am Yisrael Chai. And he said, The old Eich, and how they are alive, how much they are alive. That was our little mitzvah that we got yesterday.
So this is at the Sheva Kol.
Sheva Kol.
An Ethiopian family who's
Nebe Yaakov,
who's
apparently there weren't a lot of
son died in the war.
Son that was in the Golani. He was one of the soldiers killed.
Do you know the name?
I believe the name was Moshe Malko. I think that was the name. His name was Moshe.
We are burning the in memory of all that has fallen, and in memory, in the merit of protecting the soldiers.
Amen. Tov.
I gave the list that you gave me to my daughter to type up.
Yes.
She was having a hard time
reading the names.
Names.
Yeah, they weren't easy.
And so I'll double check with the baby naming book on the exact spelling.
Okay.
And then transliteration.
All right.
Yeah, so I can get it up on
if
the
you,
on the
you have
page.
It here with you, no?
Hmm?
You don't have it here with you. I can go through it.
No, I don't. No, not yet.
Okay.
In a few minutes. I couldn't find a website for that. I was looking everywhere. But let's continue on. I'll find it eventually.
Okay.
I may have it at home.
Top. Oh, sorry, are we on yet? Are we
recording? Yeah.
Sanhedrin, Kaf Bet, Amud Bet, 22b, about 10 lines from the top. Tana. Just finishing up now on the sugya that talks about the relationship between a man and his wife, and how important that relationship is, and how difficult it is when it's broken. The last part of that sugya says like this. Tana was taught, Ein ish met ala le ishto. A man doesn't die except for his wife. What does it mean? It means, well, one meaning anyway, I'm sure there's probably several, but one meaning is that his wife feels it most. Which is a big chiddush. Ein ish met ala le ishto. Like, she's the one who kind of really notices he's gone. I'm not sure I need the Tana to waste his breath on telling me something like that. So obviously it's brighter. It's not just, it's simply an Amorite clear. It's actually a brighter. So something that's recorded because it's important. So there's obviously more in there too. Anyway, the brighter continues. But Eini Shameta Ela Levala, a woman dies only for the sake of her husband, for her husband. He feels it most. Again, just the converse, it's not a chiddush. Einish made El Alishra. So the first one, how do I know that? How do I know that when a man dies, it's only for his wife, meaning she feels it the most? Shneim, like it says in the Pasuk, in, where's this root? Yeah. Shneim, Vayamet Elimelech Ish Nami. And died Elimelech, the husband of Naomi. Right, the fact that it stresses it was the husband of Naomi teaches that he died mostly for her, like mostly affecting her, apparently. That's the learning from the Tanakh. And the second one, Eini Shameta Ela Labala, a woman doesn't die except mostly for the sake of her husband, so to speak. Shenetma, like it says in Bereshit. Va'ani bavoi mipadan meta ala Rachel. So this is Yaakov saying that when he came from Padan, Rachel, his wife, died on him, so to speak. The fact that she died on him means that she died to him shows that her death was primarily affecting him. Right? That's that. I'm sure there's a lot more going on there than I can pick up. Mashi doesn't have any comments at this point. Yeah. My comment on that brighter is okay. I mean, the chiddush is fine, is that you show the proof for it in the verses. It would be obvious in these days too. The person most affected by the death of a spouse is the other spouse. I mean, I don't know. You know, write it, tell me that.
When,
when
the wife dies, it's like the whole house falls apart.
Yeah, if you're an average husband, then for sure. Yeah.
I mean, first my wife's mother passed away. Then a few later, her father passed away.
A few days or a few years? I missed what you said. A few days later or a few years later?
A few years later.
Oh, okay.
But after his death, literally, the furniture was in perfect condition until he died.
And
then all of a sudden, bam.
Right.
I mean, tables would split in half by just putting a coffee cup on it.
What? I can smell cheese toasting. Can you smell cheese? Toasted cheese sandwich? Toasted
yes.
cheese sandwich?
Yes.
Yeah.
Usually we don't smell it.
Why, the coffee master? Huh? The coffee normally masks it?
Yeah.
Really? Can you smell that? Tom, anyway, there's one of those stories that you get in kids' books. But they're like they're deeper, but they're kids' stories. They write them in kids' story books. They're Jewish Jewish stories of our sages type. Right, so there's one story about this this poor man who walks past a bakery every morning. He's got no money to buy. So he comes in and he smells the beautiful cooking and the beautiful baking and walks out. And he does this every day. And the baker gets fed up with it and he takes it to the rabbi, the local baker. He says, look, he comes in and he's enjoying from my stuff and he's not paying for it. Why, I think he should pay for it. The rabbi thinks about it there. He says, you know what, you're right. Says to the poor man, have you got any money on you? And he's got like, he says, we've got like 3 coins. That's all I've got. Says, wonderful, come over here. Says, take the coins and jangle them in front in his ear. Says, jangle the coins in the guy's ear. Right now you're paid for it. So we should go next door and jangle some coins in front of him.
Right.
Yeah.
And they walk right out, it was so bad, you should be paying me.
And it was so bad?
You should be paying me, honestly, every day to smell good. That's why I walk out.
I can write the sequel. Try the alternative.
No, okay. It literally smells like a cheese, grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah, it is a grilled cheese. They have a toast. Sandwich maker next door.
Oh,
right, Tom. Yes, back. Thank you. Yeah, yeah, right. Look at that. Right, Tom. Back into the Gemara. Right, new sugya on back to our Mishnah. Right, the Mishnah is about the king, Nachon. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we said about the king is that the king cuts his hair. Sorry. We didn't say that. In the Braita, we say no one sees the king cutting his hair. Mm-hmm. Right, one of the things we said in the Mishnah, sorry, was that we need to have respect and awe for the king. We're not allowed to use any of his items. We're also not allowed to see him in the bathhouse, getting changed, and not cutting his hair either. So the Gemara uses that as a springboard to talk about cutting hair. You're going to see that this next sugya is almost identical to the same thing that we covered in Agiga. No Tanit. The Tanit. And remember back, you're going to see, talking about the who gets the haircut and when, and then we're going to see that we learn it from the Nazir, and all of that same sugya is brought again over here. Tanit, Tanit, or Agiga? I think it was Tanit. No, the Kohanim. The Mishmarot. And I was in Chagiga. And Chagiga, the Mishmarot. Yofi, so what are you reading? Oh, there we go. Tanit, yes. There we go, Tanit then. Tanit.
Where are you?
Sorry, we're just at the beginning now.
No, I mean, reference to Tanit.
Oh, Tanit, what was your reference, Tanit?
Your
Zion, set page 17. It's not written in Oz, it's written in Rabbi Abraham, has it in his notes, in his side comments. Okay, Tanu Rambanan, it's sort of a brighter. Melech Mr. Per Bechoyo, the king cuts his hair every day. Kohen Gadol, may Erev Shabbat, Erev Shabbat. Kohen Gadol, every Friday. Kohen Hediot, a normal common Kohen, so sweet, we can have such a thing. A regular Kohen, Echad L'Shloshim Yom, once every 30 days.
What did he do?
Who? The king. Only the king.
He has no hair?
No, it's like you're right, by the time how much can it grow every day that you can cut? I think it's not necessary, it means that it's carefully, whatever, it's looked at, it's grooved, maybe the leader cut, maybe just a snip in the air. But it needs to be groomed every day. Just like people shave every day.
They have like
hair, like a... Who? Oh, could also be that. Like a shaved head every day. Like this part, maybe, I don't know. No idea what a king is.
Every day they check to see if their hair is on the face of the moon.
Right.
So you may have some hair on the top of the head.
What? Now, what about when it's Yomer?
It's a good question. Does the king cutting hair take precedence over the Yomer?
I mean, is it a good question?
It's a good question. The laws of the Omer are only rabbinic, right? Because we're keeping the Omer laws because of the students of Rabbi Akiva, who died later. So that was only later. You're right. So that was only later. So anyone before then presumably wasn't keeping mourning laws during the Omer, unless there was some other reason, maybe. In tradition, but in the future, when we get the king back, will he? Well, when we get the king back, maybe that we don't have that anyway. But let's say,
hopefully this week.
Hopefully today. Let's say we do. So it's a rabbinic law, and the law that the king has to cut his hair may well be deraita. It's in the Mishnah. Doesn't mean it's deraita. It could be rabbinic, but. Could certainly argue that because the laws of mourning are rabbinic, that this would take precedence. Shabbat. What about Shabbat? Your feet. So it's not every day. You wouldn't override Shabbat. Erev Shabbat. Yeah, it's a good question.
I think it would indicate that the laws of Shabbat, the Kohanim, not the regular ones, the holy ones who were working in the Beit Mikdash, did it from Friday to Friday.
Yeah.
It would think that they did it on Friday, both Shabbat.
It's always Friday to Friday. Yeah.
No, but I remember in Haggadah where the new shift took over Friday.
Yes, that's what it's going to say now.
And so they would prepare before Friday.
Right. Yes. Agreed. 100%. Okay. Top. So that was a brighter that just listed those haircut times. Right? The Gemara now says, Melech Mr. Per Bechoyo. Right? The Gemara now brings the first bit, which says, the king cuts his hair every day. How do I know that? Shnei Emar, it says in the Pasuk. Right, so we are learning it, perhaps the writer, if we're learning it out from Pasuk, it might be a writer in law that he has to do it, and then it would override rabbinic law in most cases. There's a few cases where rabbinic overrides the writer, but they're very few and far between, like two or three of them. Like, for example, no shofar on on Rosh Hashanah, that's on Shabbos. That's rabbinic overriding Torah.
Right, but Rosh Hashanah is 2 days, so you still hear Shofar during that time, during that Rosh Hashanah year. Because the next day would be either the day before, the next day would be a regular day.
When we talk about Oraita law,
yes,
do we mean only the Torah or do we mean the Tanakh?
So, we mean Oraita law means a law that was given to Moshe and Sinai. So the question is how it was given. So with one of two ways. It was either given scripturally, written law, or orally. Now the scriptural law is in the Torah, and the oral law is here, or passed down verbally. But the scriptural sources usually are in the Torah. If you wanted to write a law, you had to find it in the Torah, usually. But sometimes they bring Tanakh sources for a derived law. Sometimes. It's not always, not common. Why not a Torah law? Because one explanation I have heard is that the scriptural source in the Tanakh is more clear. Like the Torah law, it's in there, but it's just not so obvious. So they bring the Tanakh law, which is more clear here. Melech b'yachav tachtecha necha. Your eyes should see the beauty of the king. Right? So that's more clear, that if you want to find it in the Torah, it's in the Torah, but it's not so clear a learning. So that could be one reason why they bring the Tanakh pasuk instead of bringing the Torah pasuk. If it is indeed a deraita law. If it is. You'd have to look in. We've got a little Melech Mistaper Bako Yom Aleph. Right, if you look in the look in the Rambam there, or the it's only in Rambam. I have to see the commentary. Peva. Sicha Peva. So we'd have to look in the Poskim as to what they decided. It's not clear often from the Gemara where there's something the Torah law or rabbinic law, and there's Makoket. Right, we have Makoket between the Poskim, Shulchan Aruch, Ramban, Rif Rosh, as to what's rabbinic and what's Deraita. Right, there's 613 mitzvahs. Right, but no, which are Torah deraita laws, 613 deraita mitzvahs. Right, but there's a big discussion as to which ones that what you have in your count. I'm going to start, but
in the text.
Okay, so back to our Gemara. The king should have his haircut every day. We've got a proof for that from Isaiah. Kohen Gadol me'erev Shabbat. occurring at all every Friday. Where do we learn that? Or why? How do we know that's the case? Amar Rav Shmuel ben Nachman, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ha'il u'mishmarot mitchadshot. Since the mishmarot are renewed. Right? Like Rabbi Yaakov said, every week, every Shabbat, the Shabbat, the mishmarot, the shift changes in Beit HaMikdash, and therefore that's why the Kohen Gadol has a haircut. So what's the connection? Because the shift changed, the Kohen Gadol's not changing.
He has to inspect the new watch. Well, just like the honor guard.
Yeah, but he's getting the haircut, not them. They're every 30 days. The guys who are coming in are 30-day haircut guys. He's the one that we're learning gets cut every Friday.
Right,
but he's not changing at all.
They're the honor guard.
So?
He has to look good for the honor guard.
He has to look good. He has to look good. When they come in and they see him, they have to be impressed with
right.
The Kohen Gadol.
Yeah, oh right. The Tanis 15b, I remember that. We covered the whole thing about
we're doing Chazarana too. About the 24 Mishmarot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, let's carry on. Kohen Hediot, Echal Shoshim Yom. The regular Kohen gets a haircut every 30 days, Rabbi Abraham. Question is, we're going to see, do we have to do that now? We're going to remember that question? Do we still have that? Do we still have that now?
Right, that was my question.
So the Gemara asks the same question. We're going to see. Okay, Dichtiv, how do we know that that a regular Kohen has to cut his hair in 30 days? Answer, it says in Ezekiel, V'rosham lo yigalehu, they should not shave their heads, U'fera lo yishalehu, and they should not let their ferah, translates in the article as tresses, but that word is completely foreign to me, and I don't know what tresses means. So you shouldn't let their fringe grow, their bang, their animal.
The king shave every day, he said, shave, not cut.
Why?
Because he's going to shave the head.
Do not shave the head.
Yeah.
Not shave the head.
After 30 days, he doesn't shave the head. It's cut. Because he cannot shave when it's alone. Every day you have to shave, you cannot cut.
No, he was saying they're two different things. They're not allowed to shave their heads, and they're not allowed to let their hair grow long. But it doesn't mean that they are allowed to shave their heads later. No, it just means you're not allowed to shave at all. The separate statement, not allowed to shave your head, and separately, you're not allowed to let your hair grow. So it means you have to cut it, but you're not shaving.
So you can recommend for them that they can shave these
I don't think so.
Where did they
get that? The Kohanim is forbidden to shave.
Okay. But it means that only they're forbidden to shave. The average person is not. The regular Yisrael. The Kohen is not allowed to shave his head. That law doesn't apply to everyone else. King, I don't know.
Why does art school translate this as tresses? Because isn't
a tress
something that you hope you have grapevines growing up and then over in a garden or and the tress protects the grapevines so that they can grow up and around.
It could be. I don't know the word tress. It's not in my vocabulary. Tress.
It's a gardening term.
As well. Presumably it's also a barber's term. It's as well as a gardening term. I assume otherwise I don't know why it's here, but we have to assume it's some form of hair growth that you're not allowed to let your hair grow. The basic meaning of the plastic is you're not allowed to let your hair grow past a certain length, obviously, and that length is understood to be 30 days growth, because that's how we're learning it out the law, which says they have to cut every 30 days, from the pasuk, which says So you're not allowed to let your tresses grow. So what does that mean? It must mean a 30-day growth. You're not allowed to have a 30-day growth. What's a 30-day growth?
Does that mean he has to trim his beard or his pants?
No, it's his hair.
Just his hair.
His tresses. What are the tresses of the hair? Doesn't say what tresses are here. Nope. Tresses, I don't think. Glossary, the word tresses.
Yeah.
Usually only has Hebrew words.
You mentioned the word 30-day hair?
Yeah.
What? In French, I believe the word for three is tress, T-R-E-S.
Oh, interesting. Okay, tray.
Tray.
Interesting. Interesting. That's why like Archgold picks the.
Oh, that's good.
It's good. It's good. Kiddush. You might that Kiddush in your memoir. Yeah, but it's still the same root.
Yeah,
T-R-E. Yeah. Tracy.
We're learning off stuff today.
Moshe Kadosh. Did you hear the announcement, by the way, that next on Sunday is Rashi's Hakadosh Yortzeit. They're doing a Suda in the Zvil. Right. You want to hear? We heard last year. Top. Hey, something to look forward to. Okay, no, nothing on Rashi. Let's continue. So, they shouldn't let their hair grow. Continuing, the passage says, Kasom yikasmul yichsmul et roshehem. They shall trim their heads. Okay, so that's the passage. So it says that you shouldn't let their hair grow. So how do I know that's 30 days? So the Gemara now explains how I know that means 30 days. V'yalif, we do a yalif. Yalif is a comparison, we learn it out, we derive it, gezeirah shavah. Pera, pera, minazir. We learn it from the word pera, which is in this pasuk, and the word pera, which is in the pasuk of the nazir. Right, what's the pasuk of the nazir? We've got that on the side here. Roshan Lai Gaf Pera Lai Shulu Roshan Koyume Neder. Is that it? Here it is, the passage regarding the Nazir says Koyume Neder, all the days of his vow and his royal, his Neder, his Nazir vow Ta'alo Ya'avo Arosho, a shaver, a blade, a knife shave shouldn't come over his head and Belota Yamim, until he fulfills his days Asher Yazir Lashem, which he vowed to Hashem. Kadosh Yeh, he will be holy to Hashem. Gadel Pera Sa'arosho, he shall grow the Pera of the hair of his head, the tresses of the hair of his head. He shall grow it. So the fact that we see over there that he grows it, we're learning from the Nazir to the law of the Kohen. Kohen also is not allowed to grow this Pera. So where do I get 30 days from? So the next part of the Gemara explains how I get 30 days. You're right, I linked Kohen to a Nazir, but and I need to link that to 30 days. So it says, Ketiv Hacha, so these are the two Gezeirah Shavah. It's written over there, Upera Loi Shalechu, regarding the Kohen, that his hair, his tress, he shouldn't let it grow, he shouldn't send it out. Ketiv Hatam, it's written over there regarding the Nazir, Gadal Pera Se'arosho, that he does grow the tresses of his hair of his head. Ma lahalan shoshim. Just like over there in the case of a Nazir, we know that it's 30 days. We're going to see how we know it's 30 days in a minute. We know it's 30 days. as Kanshroshim. So too over here in the case of the Kohen, we also know from the Gezer Shava there, it's also 30 days. Utanan Nami, we learned in the Mishnah, Sam Nezirot Shloshim Yom. Sam Nezirot, the basic standard regular case of Nezirot, is 30 days. Right? How do I know that it's 30 days? The Gemara continues. Vatam Menalan, and over there, where do I know that from? How do I know a Sam Nezirot is 30 days? Where did you get that from? Amar Rav Matna, Rav Matna said, the Pasuk says, Kadosh Yeh, like we just read in that Pasuk, he should be holy. The Gematria to Latin Havu. Yeh is the Gematria 30, the word Yeh. Yud is 10, Hey is 5, another Yud is 10, another Hey is 5, 30 altogether. So we're learning out from a Gematria, which is also those who have been learning Makot, which is everyone here. Remember in Makot we had very similar teaching. Remember when we had the same teaching? In Makot. Not about a Nazir, but about Stam. Something Stam was 30 days and we learned it out from the Gematria.
No?
Loan, Yafimod. A loan, a Stam loan is 30 days. And if at the Rashi over there,
so it can't be collected before 30 days.
Can't be called in before 30 days because a stamp loan is 30 days. How do I know a stamp loan is 30 days? The Rashi explained in the Rashi over there because of the Gematria. Where's Makot? I can't remember what the Gematria was. It's a Gematria, and we learned it out from a Gematria over there, which is interesting.
Something about a normal person wouldn't put into the effort of
collecting
for 30 days because a loan normally has to be written up and
right.
It takes time and effort to find a silver and witnesses, so he wouldn't bother for a 30 day loan, but anything else he would. Am I close?
Yeah. Homework. Oh, it's in there somewhere. The Zohar Shem, unless I made it up. It's also possible.
No, but was I close?
Yeah. You have to review.
I just don't remember where.
So now you need to review. Make him find out where. Good morning, Rabbi Hanan.
Good morning.
Yom Chamishi. Almost Shabbos.
Almost there.
Yossi. Tov. So now we have, the rule. That's the long way of learning out the rule that Rabbi Avraham has to cut his hair every 30 days. Standard Cohen has to cut his hair every 30 days.
That's in
Tanis.
It's in page 918.
Just did it. So, well, maybe it goes over, maybe by the time it goes over.
15B.
It starts on 15 and it goes over. Right, it's a long sugil over there too. Yeah, Femod. So, and how do we learn it out? We learn it out from the law of the Nazir. Nachon? Rabbi Hanan, you learned it from Nazir?
Yeah.
The Nazir, Stam Nazir is 30 days.
That's the Shavuot they take is for 30 days.
It's for 30 days, and therefore there's a Gezer Shava with the word Pera. Pera, Pera. Just like we have the word Pera for a Kohen, we have the word Pera for a Nazir. And it means 30 days growth. Yofi. Amale Rav Papa la Abai. Rav Papa now asks a question back to Abai. Abai was the one who brought this teaching. Rav Papa's questioning it and saying, wait a minute. Ema, you could say, Lo liuhu klau. Don't let it grow at all. Right, the pasuk in... where's that pasuk from? About the Kohen? The pasuk in Ezekiel, which says about Kohanim, Barosha, the Ufera lo yishalehu, that they shouldn't let their hair grow. How do I know it means 30 days? Maybe you could just read the passage literally, don't let the hair grow, don't let it grow at all. Who says 30 days? Right? Maybe it means you have to cut it every day. You're not allowed to let the hair grow. Why don't you understand it that way? Why do you want to make a gezeirah shavah and make it 30 days? So there's a couple of different ways of answering this. The footnote here brings the Tosfot, which says that the Tosfot has a different understanding as Rashi than Rashi, than, as to what exactly the question is here. Let's get stick with the Rashi question, the simple question before we get to the Tosfot question. The simple question that the Gemara is asking here is, like I just explained, how can you say you need 30 days? Maybe it means don't grow at all. So then Amale, he replies to him, Abai says to him, Ikativ lo yishalku fera. If he would have said you shouldn't let them grow your fera, your tress, kadakamata, then it would be like you said, sorry, then I would agree with you. Tress hair, apparently. Tress.
The walk there.
Testing me to see if I came in. Kitaka Marata, then it would be like you said. I would agree with you. If the pasuk had said you shouldn't let them grow your hair, then it means a complete no growing. Bahasha dichtiv, but now it says ufera and your hair you shall not grow. What's it, ufera and fera? It means that fera la'ave, you are allowed to have fera. Shalku lo yishalechu, but you shouldn't let it grow. So you are allowed to have fera, a hair growth, but you shouldn't let it grow. So once I have that learning, then I need to look to see how much growth I am allowed, which is why I've got the Gezeirah Shavah, which brings me to the 30-day period. Rabbi Avraham Hashemi. So you want to say something? You want to do a...
Well, it's like taking a donkey and putting a tuxedo on as long as a donkey man. Tuxedo man.
Lama lo. Also good. You want to...
When you're done,
yeah, you want to...
What?
Don't know, so I'm done. If you want to... Yeah? You want to... Yeah,
sure. I have something. This is interesting.
No, so we wanted to try a bit of chizuk on Torah learning, but I don't want to eat into the class of Rabbi Naim. So
I think
try and see how it works to do 5 minutes at the end of this class.
I think it's the first thing.
Obviously, we'll do it for a week, and then I'll get feedback and decide whether or not it's worth it or not. Quite happy to go either way.
I don't really prepare anything, but I think. No, I'm not. Like I said, no rabbi. I'll sit here as long as nobody calls me rabbi ever.
Okay. Just which book are you reading and which?
So this is, so basically like this. So like Rabbi Rubin said that we have. Works through this. We have a lot of chizuk in faith and tefillah, which is very important. It's an integral part of Yiddishkeit. But one thing that is very important that we just don't have a structure for is to instill within us, myself included, a love of learning and a love of Torah. And that's what when a Jew lives a Jewish life, one of the essential ingredients. This is Torah. It's not that we're not learning Torah, but we need to feel always a passion and a hysteria, so always awakening from inside to run and to attach ourselves to Hashem's Torah. And to do that, you need chizuk. Like, for example, you hear a story of a tzaddik who in tefillah or in faith, all of a sudden you want to run to the field. Right? If you hear about tzaddikim who learn Torah and different things they say about learning Torah, it's going to wake up inside of us a drive and a desire to want to learn more, to want to accomplish, to take on more learning, to take our learning more seriously, to take Havrusa time more seriously. And that's something that...
I think it should be given at 10 o'clock, because we get here at 9. Uh-huh. The idea of running and getting out of your house, the time to get here at 9 o'clock and not 10, this would be a better chizuk for those who come only at 10, and us.
What time do you come?
Huh?
What time do you come?
So I
don't have to do it. The truth is, he suggested it. I said, I don't even know if I want to do it, but he told me to come.
To come at 9 is
the way. What I'm saying is that the guys who are sitting here are probably the most awake, excited, right?
I could earlier.
And it's Chabal that those who wander in at 10, 10, 30, 11 o'clock, and really should be benefiting from this.
We're already falling asleep by 10:30.
So that's also a problem we have to work on. So fall asleep after our learning, we have to fall asleep at 10:30 p.m. I'm just kidding. No, so I don't, the truth is, that's just an introduction, I don't know, I don't even know if I want to, he put me up here now, I don't know. We talked about it on the phone, whatever. I said it. Anyway, so I'm not sure. What my idea was is to bring different sources from different Sfarim about just the topic of Torah learning and different ideas on how to learn, and more of like a discussion to discuss, to see what Rav Arif says, what Rabbeinu says, what other masters of the Hasidic world say. Even a literature, anybody, you know, anything on Torah learning that gives us chizuk is definitely good. And also, one thing is, we don't have guidance in how to learn here in this yeshiva. We don't have it. In the Hebrew program, we have it, but because the English program is new, we have, everybody kind of does their own thing. But there's nobody who's here and falls into a system of structured growth. We don't have a system that offers structured growth. Now, to take somebody who's the raw ingredients of a person, a Jew, with a little bit of Ratzon, and take him from step A to step Z and turn him into something who, you know, something real in the world, in Torah learning. I don't know if that's...
But not everyone can go through the same path.
Correct. So...
This is my rabbi
right. So there are systems that allow that are flexible enough for everybody to go through the same path. There are plenty of other Baal Teshuva yeshivas who have such systems. We don't have that. We have kind of like a free-for-all, which is also good. Look, the truth is, if somebody who's never been to yeshiva comes in and reads one word from a sefer, gavaldik, we should dance. You know, that's also the truth. That's also the emes. But there is a side to say that every single Jew has their own chelik in Torah, and there's not a side to say that's the emes, and certain things can be done to bring that out. So part of that is ratzon. If we don't have a systematic system, a program for such a thing, we're working on it, but part of that is the ratzon. Part of that is like...
Do you know what it means, chassid?
Sorry?
What it means, chassid?
Do I know what it means, chassid?
No, what means the word chassid?
Do I know what that means? What does it mean? You're asking me?
It means the Baal Nefesh. Baal Nefesh means chassid. The chassid is ratzon.
Ratzon. Wow. As a matter of fact, it says there's no, in Perkei Avos, it says there's no chassid who's an amaretz. The beginning of chassidus, like the Ramchal says, no svarim, that the beginning of chassidus is Talmud Torah. I came to Rav Elgrad once, and I told him, I said, look, it's not working out for me here. I don't have a program, I don't have a system to learn, and I really want to learn. And he said, what are you doing here? I said, what do you mean what I'm doing here? Rav Arsh is here, the tzaddik. I believe he's the tzaddik of the generation. I need his brothers. I need your shemayim. I need a muna. He said, no. He said, your Torah learning, developing yourself as a personality in Torah comes first. He told me, get out of here. Rav Elgrad told me, he basically kicked me out of the yeshiva and said, you have to go learn before you have chassidus. This is what he told me. The truth is, I don't know if it's a test from him. I didn't want to go. Obviously, I'm still here. And Baruch Hashem, I have a good chavrusa. Baruch Hashem, things are working out. But that's just to show the importance of Torah learning. Like Rav Arush, he when he made tshuva, before he got to his levels of faith, like Rav Dror said, he took a shtender, he came to yeshiva, he faced the shtender against the wall, and he sat and he learned Torah for 12 hours, nonstop, every single day. And that's what he did in the beginning of his tshuva for a long time, before he touched anything in faith. Like it says in Torah, but before, not before he touched anything in faith. Yeah. But like it says in Lukut Yomayim Torah Aleph, that like we discussed before, that through Torah learning, the nun attaches to the ches. The nun, which is chachma, attaches to the nun, which is malchus, attaches to the ches, which is chachma. And you get chayim, and then all your tefillahs are accepted. So, what's this nun? This nun is faith. This nun is faith. Basically, the Torah says that there's two types of malchus. There's the malchus de sitra achra and the malchus de kedusha. The malchus de kedusha is what attaches to chachma. To the ches, to what Hashem is telling you in everything, the divine wisdom inside every single thing. And in order to attach the divine wisdom inside every single thing, you need to activate this malchus de kedusha, and not the malchus de sitra achra. Right? So the malchus de kedusha is faith. It's malchus. It's the good malchus, the faith. How do you activate this good malchus, which is this faith? Through Torah learning, it says. Meaning that through Torah learning, a person is able to build his faith. A person's faith is limited to, or a person's ability to build faith is limited by how much Torah he learns. Meaning the more a person sacrifices himself and learns Torah and attaches himself to the divine will through Torah learning, that to that degree he's able to build his faith. That's the message from Torah, from Likut Moran Torah Aleph. I don't know, so basically the idea was to bring in different svarim and just to discuss different topics in Torah learning. So he said, come up here. I grabbed Rabbi Nachman's the Aleph Beis book, it's called in English. What's it called in Hebrew? Sefer Amidos. So he has a section called Torah learning. Something that I wanted to ask everybody here, which I found very interesting yesterday, I don't understand this at all, and I wanted to see if somebody can understand this. Rabbi Nachman writes here.
Oh, what page?
It's page 115.
On Rabbi Nachman's
Aleph Beis book in English. Rabbi Nachman's Aphorisms on Jewish Living by the Breslov Research Institute.
Okay.
So anybody wants to buy it, they could get it on Breslov, their websites or on Amazon. But anyway, Rabbi Nachman says something interesting, which I do not understand. I asked my chavrus, and he doesn't understand it either. It says like this. Torah study is even... Rabbi Nachman writes this. I promise you, this is wild. Torah study is even greater than saving lives. Building the Holy Temple and honoring one's parents. Who understands that? I don't understand it. Does anybody have an idea what that means? How Torah learning, meaning when you're opening up a Gemara, a Chumash, and you're learning Torah and you're engaged in learning, that's greater than saving lives.
Saving souls all over the world. When you're learning Torah, you're saving souls all over the world by learning.
So you're saying it's a spiritual thing. We're saving souls in other locations as opposed to physically saving souls, and you're saying we're able to save more souls.
If you're learning Torah, then that's more important than...
Meaning if somebody's drowning, right?
Right.
Your Torah learning, in a sense, I think is what it's saying, is more important, maybe not, than taking the guy out of the lake from drowning. And I think, I'm not sure, and that sounds like chiddush to me.
I have 2 points. One, after Rav Lazer Brody was speaking, didn't someone say something about someone was talking to his brother who was Hilani, he got wounded in Gaza, and he said that the person's Torah learning was protecting everyone in Gaza or something like that. I'm totally misquoting. But also, I was thinking historically, in the last 100 years, with the destruction of the yeshivas in Europe, Torah learning went really down for a while.
And we had the Holocaust.
And we had the Holocaust, and after the Holocaust. And now it's slowly bringing back up. But that destruction of Torah learning created all the intermarriage and everything else like that. So the souls have been sort of scattered.
Interesting.
You can learn Torah in all things. So you can give it to the Torah.
Right.
He said, the important thing is not the Torah, the action.
Right.
Not
on.
When you save someone from drowning, you're saving one person.
Right.
When you're learning the Torah and saving that person from drowning through your prayers, or somebody selfish from being killed,
right,
it's more important than you're stopping your study and going out and maybe saving that one person,
right,
or saving more.
Right.
Is that like
you're like a shield for them, like for all of Am Yisrael or something.
Is that like in this issue? Is that always to my wife? We soldiers.
Right.
So Rabbi Arush sent us to different missions.
Right.
We go to on Sunday, but then Sheva, yesterday, 6 hours. So we include this.
Right.
We start up the Torah. Now we put in action.
The other point I want to make is that what Rabbi Elizabeth Brody said last night in his evening shir was that we need to learn out of love instead of out of I'm right and I'm trying to convince everyone that I'm right versus I want to learn, you know, I'm listening to my Habrusa and trying to understand what he's saying versus trying to make a point and I'm right and pushing myself on the Habrusa.
Right. And enjoying your learning also out of love.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I had when I was on Sunday in the hospital with two other guys from Yeshiva. I saw and very so hard to talk. The other two guys in Yeshiva were like some people. They was so kindful to the people they were going to music and life. And I spent like the TV. I was like perplexed. I see my so far. I see the heart.
So just to leave off, I think that right now we see we have a serious situation in Eretz Yisrael, and we see what Rabbi Nachman is telling us. That I think that seems like the only correct pshat that I could understand, that when you learn Torah, you're actually saving more people, physically also, because, you know, it's spiritual, but it's physical. Everything spiritual manifests in the physical world. So when you learn Torah, you're at least saving two people as opposed to saving one person physically, because again, when you learn, something is happening spiritually, but that's creating a physical protection. That sounds to me like the only pshat I could understand. So with that being said, with what's going on in Am Yisrael today, and with what Rabbeinu is telling us here, how we understand it, we should, I think that when we are learning Gemara and whatever we're learning, we should have that intention. We should keep in mind that our Torah learning is greater than saving physical lives, because we are saving physical lives, but in a spiritual way. And we should have that in mind, especially today, especially now with what's going on in the sound. My wife told me there's a program right now called Donate Adopt a Soldier. So my wife came. I came up. She said, "I adopted a soldier. You want to adopt one also?" So I think really the truth is that, if you daven somebody by name, there's something special. But every single Jew, it's as if he adopted every single other Jew. So every single person here, really the truth is, it's our job to adopt all the soldiers right now in Gaza while we're learning, because that's our job, and we could do that through our Torah learning. Right now, through the next 2 hours, we should have that in mind. We should learn for the sake of, learn with co-op, learn with extra oomph, with energy, with effort, and that extra learning should be a schus and should protect all of the soldiers in Gaza. We should keep that in mind.
But I would make one.
6 hours to pray. One was about praying to Tzitzit and Kippot. Yesterday, in the morning, my wife told me the friend of her, one of the family members, is in Gaza. When he is injured, at that they go in and take him out. And they need some protection. So they call the family, a couple of hours. Because they have not the protection. For a couple of hours, they have $130,000 to them.
Wow, Amishel is a beautiful nation.
It's like protection too.
That's fun, that's fun. It's a real protection.
Well, we need to re-emphasize that the idea of love instead of arrogance. And also, not only in Gaza, but there are other hot spots going out.
Right, right. To protect all of our
exactly.